Yep, he's planning another project. So this Father's Day at Lowe's, tap into free gifts for dad. Get a free select Craftsman power tool when you buy a Craftsman V20 charger with 2 amp hour and 4 amp hour batteries. Plus, get a free DeWalt power tool when you buy a select 20 volt max XR 4 amp hour battery kit. Dad knows our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 7/14 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, visiting with my friend and colleague Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, discussing the planned meeting between Putin and Xi in October in Beijing. Beijing right now is in the midst of tumult. I take it this isn't ordinary tumult, but you can't tell because it's a non-transparent city. The CCP has made a decision, or Xi has made a decision. Qin Gang, the foreign minister, not seen in public or anywhere since June 25th, is now replaced. And I'm told that he's disappearing from all the websites. Qin Gang disappeared, replaced by his predecessor, Wang Yi, the chief diplomat of the Chinese Communist Party. What is striking, there's also a decision to replace the central banker with a much younger man. I'm told these things are routine. Yes, they are routine for Beijing, for the CCP, there are always purges, there are always people being disappeared, and then everything is presented as normal. I'm not focusing on the economy here. It is deeply troubled. It doesn't have easy answers to the property collapse, to the lack of consumerism, and to the distrust generated by abuse over the years by China of foreign investors and companies that come from outside to practice in China, nor the new counterintelligence law that will persecute whimsically anybody who achieves data in China and either doesn't share it adequately or is suspect of keeping the data privately. That's how serious the counter-espionage law can be. But I want to speak of war, either cyber war or kinetic war or both. We're told by the U.S. Navy and other voices that the planning at the DOD now, putting officers into place, building ships, reinforcing pieces of the Pacific Defense Network, are looking at 2026, 2027 as an attack by China in some fashion. And I turn to Gregory to ask what this present tumult in the capital means, whether there's, and his previous remarks about Xi doubting the loyalty, the trust of the PLA, and what this means for war fighting as projected. Gregory, does this make China any different than it's been before, these replacements at the top, Xi Jinping being the all-powerful? Is it more prepared for a war than it was before, or are we looking at vulnerabilities here?
Well, we're certainly looking at vulnerabilities, and the question is, will Xi interpret this as a message that he does not have the cohesion, trust, and force structure ready to go to war? Or will he interpret as the fact that the castle is falling around him and he needs to take aggressive action, in other words, start a war with Taiwan, for example, in order to build up public support for his leadership and to be able to purge all of his enemies once and for all? The answer is, it could go either way, and it could go into an earlier rather than later commitment to conflict, because the longer that Xi leaves this situation, the worse his economy will be, the more prepared his adversaries will be, both in the Republic of China, Japan, Vietnam, India, and the like. And so there's an incentive to, if he's going to attack, it could be sooner rather than later. And there's some suggestion that as far as Xi Jinping is concerned, he would prefer to undertake a military operation against Taiwan before the Taiwanese can get any stronger. That's one thing, of course. But whilst President Joe Biden is still in command in the United States, because I think that Xi Jinping regards President Biden as his best opportunity. Another Democratic leader, unless it's Kamala Harris, is likely to take a strong line against the People's Republic of China in any military confrontation, just as a future Republican president would. So, in other words, all of the things favoring an early decision for conflict, as far as she's concerned, are pushing towards a sooner rather than later decision. However, he has got to have been shaken, not just by the Qingang situation, but by the reality that there is no trust between him and his military leadership. He still has not identified all of his adversaries. He thought he had purged all of the primary leaders, but still you have the Jiang Zemin faction out there. You still have the PLA faction, which he is now starting to realize is really not his great power base that he thought it was. And the Qingang situation may be part of that. Qingang was going to be the great new hope. He was a great Xi loyalist, young, dynamic, and so on, brought in to the position of foreign minister only in December last year, December 21. So he's been, 22. So he's been in the job for a very short time, and yet here he is purged, and it was an urgent purge. He was removed in the middle of a process. It wasn't like he was eased out gradually. The National People's Congress Standing Committee met on July 25th to make that decision to remove him as foreign minister without having a successor in place, which is why they put Wang Yi, the former foreign minister, back in temporary control. The National People's Congress Standing Committee normally meets at the end of every second month on even months, and July is an odd month, as it was. So the Standing Committee meeting was an urgent one. They got rid of him. They didn't have a replacement, but it was ostensibly to do with his affair with this Phoenix TV star presenter, Fu Xiaoqian, who may or may not have been compromised by foreign power, maybe doubtful. But the reality is that Phoenix TV, which is a Hong Kong-based, ostensibly private enterprise, was funded by the PLA and by the intelligence organs. So basically, the question is, did she see Qingang and Fu Xiaoqian as actually being co-opted by the opposition, by it within the Communist Party, within the People's Liberation Army and the intelligence organs? So whatever it is, it shows a degree of instability and paranoia around Xi Jinping's leadership. So his real position is very unstable. His ability to trust his colleagues is almost zero at this point. So he's looking to build a new power base, hence the new governor of the central bank, for example, who's a young loyalist, or we think is a loyalist. We also thought Qingang was a loyalist. So the question is, which way is he going to jump? Is he, if he understands that he does not have the cohesion he needs to attack the Republic of China and then embark on a wider war, because that a wider war would automatically begin with that, then, you know, if he doesn't understand that he doesn't have that strength, then he will likely do something to save himself, because he does not want to go down in history as the man who lost the People's Republic of China, because that's the possible consequence of a total implosion of the CCP leadership.
At the same time, the PLA Navy appears to have a plan. In other words, we've got two faces here. No plan. All of a sudden, someone you've made your protege disappears from history. And the other hand, this is the Financial Times in these last hours. China has made significant progress building a naval base in Cambodia and is close to completing a pier that could berth an aircraft carrier, according to satellite imagery. There's an image from Black Sky of this great big pier out into the water. The Pentagon believes China is building a facility to boost its ability to project naval power. Does this follow with the assumption, I'm told, that's all we have, from the Pentagon, of war within 3 years? Or is this part of their necklace of pearls that they're building into the Atlantic? How do you regard a Cambodia base? That's not the Pacific. That's on your way into the Indian Ocean. Yes.
Yeah. Well, the Ream Naval Base, which has been is a pretty minor base, and yes, they have bolstered it and they've built that special pier so that they can take larger ships, including carrier-sized vessels. What can they do with them there? Can they refuel them? Probably. Can they rearm them? Much more difficult unless you have stockpiles of ordnance and spares built up there in advance, and they could be doing that. But there's no evidence that there's a major facility there at this stage, certainly not yet on the level of that other major base, which has taken years to start to build up in the Gulf of Tadjoura in Djibouti. That is that's much more advanced than the Ream Naval Base in Cambodia. But it's certainly a start. And certainly the PLA and the PLA Navy in particular are acting as though they are getting ready for a conflict within the near future. It could be that the PLA overall sees that future having its first task as saving the Communist Party and saving the People's Republic of China from Xi Jinping. And is there grounds to believe that there could be a coup of sorts, maybe appearing as something slightly different, to remove him and come back to a more consensus-based party leadership? That's really a possibility that that the PLA could be the facilitator of that. And they're much more likely to act in cohesion for that reason than to just fall apart at an order of war from Xi Jinping against Taiwan.
I want to look at what the U.S. Navy is said to see in the Pacific. The PLA Navy has lots of ships, but they don't evidence to me the sophisticated level of warfighting necessary to take on combined fleets. That would be Japan, the U.S., Australia, the British would be in there, the French would be in there everywhere. So
Taiwan.
2 or 3 years, Gregory, what is it that the PLA Navy needs to do in 2 or 3 years, and can we watch them do it? Can we learn from them?
Well, they need to determine where they're going to put their focus. They've been concentrating a lot of their capital on building carrier battle groups, and within a few years they'll probably have 3 nominal carrier battle groups ready to go to sea, but there's no evidence that they can defend those. They may be great for prestige, and they certainly are, and for power projection up to, but not including, peer-to-peer war with the United States and with other allies like Japan and Britain and the like. So they have to think about what is it that's going to win them a war against the United States. And clearly, it's not going to be the carrier battle groups. They will need to build up their submarine capabilities. And, of course, they need the strategic rocket forces and the naval, PLA Navy's ship-launched ballistic missiles. They don't have enough of those vessels. The United States, on its own, has an incredibly sophisticated capability, both in the delivery of submarine-launched ballistic missiles, SLBMs, and in nuclear attack submarines, which can take out a lot of the PLA Navy's vessels. And the PLA Navy doesn't have enough of that capability, and the strategic rocket forces really can't be sure of the effectiveness of what they have. What we saw in the two wars in the 1970s between the People's Republic of China and Vietnam was that the Vietnamese, with a much more primitive but much more experienced military, were able to inflict incredible damage on the People's Liberation Army.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. Our favorite segment of the week next, the King Charles III Report. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.